It is November 18th, and we continue learning about how to create. Here are creation series with them, and the precious Chayei Sara. And I'm sure everybody is waiting for precious Toldos, because that's what really gets interesting. As if everything we've learned until now is kind of boring. But before we get there, we just have a couple more points to make in Chayei Sara, you know, when we want to tell those and Vayetze. We are on page 120 and 121. Last time we discussed Abraham remarrying Hagar, whose name is now Keturah, with the help of Yitzchak marrying Rivka. And we talked about how he had children from Keturah, but his main child is Yitzchak. And he sends away all the other children before his death, while he is still alive, and makes it clear that Yitzchak is his main heir. Or his only heir, actually. Now, we have the death of Abraham, and that starts at Pasuk Yud, verse 10. Seven. Thank you. Pasuk Zayin, verse 7. These are the years that Abraham lived. 175 years. Similar to the way we found Sarah's life written separately. 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years. Here it's 175 years. And they translate Vayigva as expired. I don't know what it means. They translate, and Abraham expired and died. Not sure how that's two different things. Yeah, okay. So Abraham died with a ripe old age, or a good old age, and satisfied, content. Vayasef alamav, and he was gathered into his people. Vayikbaru oso Yitzchak v'Yishmael banav el ma'as ha-machpelah. And he was buried by Yitzchak and Yishmael, his sons, in the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, El Sedei Ephron Ben Sochar HaChiti, in the field of Ephron Ben Sochar HaChiti, Asher Pnei Mamre, which is on the face of Mamre. HaSadei Asher Kona Avraham Meis Bnei Ches, the field that was purchased by Avraham from Bnei Ches, Shama Kubar Avraham Sara Ishto, there Avraham is buried and Sarah his wife. At this point in time, they're the only ones of the Avos and the Imos, the patriarchs and matriarchs, are buried there. But in addition to them, we have another couple buried there. Adam and Chava are buried there as well. Adam and Eve. And later, of course, Yitzchak and Rivka and Yaakov and Leah were buried there as well.
So, Rabbi, who were his people? Father
Ben Sarah. That's a good question. What people?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Vayhi achar Imos Avraham, and it was after Avraham died. Vayavarach Elohim es Yitzchak beno, and Hashem benched. He blessed Yitzchak his son. Vayeshev Yitzchak im Be'er Lachairoi. And Yitzchak lived or dwelled with the Be'er Lachairoi. That's where he chose to live. This reinforces the point we made last week, that there was a good relationship between Yitzchak and Hagar, because Yitzchak chooses to live with Be'er Lachairoi. That's where he lives. And then the last few verses, which we'll get to in a moment, are the descendants of Yishmael. Before we leave Yishmael and move on to Yitzchak, which is Parshas Toldos, there's a short description of Yishmael's descendants. Now, being gathered into one's nation is a phrase that is used for tzaddikim, for the righteous. You don't find that phrase for those who are evil, which means that if someone today is gathered into their nation, it means they're part of the Jewish people after death as well as during lifetime. So Mrs. Wittenberg is asking, but there was no Jewish people. Abraham started the whole thing, which is a good question. I don't have a strong answer for you. I like the question better than the answer I'm going to suggest. But what I would suggest, though, is that it means the righteous. He was gathered into the nation of righteous people who had already passed away before him, including, but not limited to, Mesushelach, Noach, Shem. Those who had Shem was still alive, actually. Yeah, Shem was still alive.
Could you reference to Gan Eden?
Possibly. It says his nation. The question is, who's the nation? So that's my suggestion, but I like the question better than the answer. Now, we pointed out. Excuse me, one moment. you're listening on tape, don't make it. Don't say amen. Well, I'll do that. You can actually hear the bracha at the time that it's made, not whenever it's listened to.
But your telephone is fine.
Possibly, because it is happening at that time. Now, we've pointed out that Yishmael is an interesting personality. We've talked about him in depth. And he did some pretty evil things in his lifetime. And his descendants do some pretty evil things to us and are still doing evil things to us. On the other hand, Yishmael does not seem to be as much the epitome of evil as Esav. Esav seems to be the epitome of evil. Esav, as we will see starting in Parshas Toldos, replaces Nimrod as the epitome of evil in the world. We'll talk about that as soon as we start Parshas Toldos. But Yishmael seems to have two sides to him, because even in the way that he's described before his birth, he'll be a wild man. But the description is not one of intense evil, but there certainly is something there that isn't good about him. On the other hand, you find he's part of the entourage that Abraham has when he takes Yitzchak for Akedas Yitzchak, and even though there and then it is made clear that Yitzchak is the main descendant of Abraham, and his entourage, which was Yishmael and Eliezer, are written out. But at the same time, it seems that there was some righteousness about him at that point. And it is derived from here that Yishmael, in fact, did do teshuvah before he died, before Yishmael died. And that is because, and I mentioned this in the past, when Abraham is buried, it says in Pasuk Tes, verse 9, Vayikbaru Oso Yitzchak v'Yishmael Banav. He was buried by Yitzchak and Yishmael, his sons. Yishmael put Yitzchak before him, recognizing that Yitzchak is the main heir to Abraham, recognizing that Yitzchak is the greater of the two. So Yishmael recognizes his place and puts Yitzchak in front of him. This is in stark contrast to the death of Yitzchak, which is described in Parshas Vayishlach. This coming week's parsha, we'll find that he is buried by Esav and Yaakov. Esav is before Yaakov in that statement. So Esav refuses to acknowledge Yaakov's preeminence, but Yishmael does acknowledge Yitzchak's preeminence, and that does speak of his doing teshuva. In addition to that, it says that Abraham died b'seva tova, which they translate as a good old age. This is a fulfillment of the nevuah of the prophecy which Abraham already had back in Parshas Lech Lecha at the Bris Bein HaBesarim, at the covenant between the halves, where Hashem told Abraham, Ve'ata tavo el avosecha v'shalom, you will come to your ancestors in peace. Tikaver b'seva tova, you shall be buried in a good old age. Which is what it says here. If he died in a good old age. What does that mean, a good old age? Rashi tells us back then, and I'll read you the Rashi. No reason for me to paraphrase it. We're looking at it straight from Rashi himself. I'm looking, you don't need to turn, but I'm looking on page 68. In Perek Tesvav, chapter 15, Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15. And there, the pasuk I just quoted to you, Rashi says, "Tikaver b'seva tova, you shall be buried in a good old age." Bisro Hashem informed Abraham, "Sheyasa Yishmael teshuva b'yamav, that Yishmael will do teshuva while Abraham was still alive." V'lo yetzei Esav l'tar b'sra b'yamav, and in addition, Esav will not begin to be evil during Abraham's lifetime. Abraham will die seeing all of his descendants righteous, even though eventually Esav will not be righteous, but Abraham will die before Esav, as we say, goes off the derech, before he leaves the fold. And as we'll see when we begin Parshas Toldos, that is why Abraham dies at age 175 instead of age 180, which really is when he should have died. He dies 5 years premature in order not to see Esau's evil. But Yishmael does do teshuva. We know that the concept of Maisa Avo Simul Abanim, that the actions of our ancestors, particularly the patriarchs, are a simon, are a symbol, are a sign for their children. We found already ample example of this. For instance, Abraham and Sarah going down to Egypt, and then their children went down to Egypt. Paro takes Sarah and gets Saras. He gets afflicted for taking Sarah. Later, Paro will get Saras when he keeps the Jewish people under his control. And then they leave with great wealth from Mitzrayim, just as the Jews later on leave Mitzrayim with great wealth. This plays itself out over and over again throughout Sefer Bereishis, that we see Maisa Avo Simul Abanim, that what happens to them happens to their children. Yishmael, doing teshuva at the end of his life, to me, it would seem to indicate that there has to be some significance for us today in that. Meaning, we're not going to suggest that the descendants of Yishmael today are righteous. We know that they are quite evil and have perpetrated terrible acts against our people. And we pray that we see their punishment, the punishment of the descendants of Yishmael, speedily end in our days. And that the punishment should not be sparing at all, but it should be they should be given back in spades what they have dealt to our people. At the same time, it seems that there is some element of teshuva that Yishmael is capable of. Whether this, in fact, will play itself out before the end of days, as time goes on, I can't say. I'm not a prophet. But from the description of the Chumash, it seems that there is that possibility. And we've mentioned this in the past. I say this because we're about to see another example of this, or a significant piece to this puzzle, and which is why I brought the marker, because tonight we're going to do a little math. And that's going to be, as we read, the next part of the Chumash. Ve'ela told us Yishmael ben Avraham, these are the descendants of Yishmael, the son of Avraham, Asha Yalda Hagar HaMitzris Shibcha Sarah l'Avraham. That Hagar, the Egyptian, the maid of Sarah, bore for Avraham. Again, let us point out, Hagar is forever known as
Keturah.
Egyptian. Maid of Sarah. It's true. Both of you are right. She is Keturah. She is an Egyptian, but she is constantly, consistently referred to as the maid of Sarah. That was her position. That was her rightful position. And she had no right to throw off the yoke of Sarah back in Parshas Lech Lecha, as we described it then, and showed what she had done wrong and why that whole event transpired over there. But these are the descendants. Now count them. Ve'el Shmos b'nei Yishmael b'shmos sam v'sol v'sam. These are, this is not the math I was talking about, this is easy. These are the names of the sons of Yishmael, and it says that again, in their names, according to their descent. Bechor Yishmael Nevayos, the Bechor, the firstborn of Yishmael, was Nevayos. The Kedar ve'ad be'el umivsam. That's four names. Nevayos, Kedar, ad be'el umivsam. Umishma, v'duma, umasa. Three more. You now have seven. Chadad, v'seima. That's nine. Yetur, nafish, v'kedma. 12. Where else have we seen the number 12 with descendants besides the 12 sons of Yaakov, which haven't happened yet? Who remembers? Extra credit for whoever remembers this one. The end of Parshas Vayera, remember, Milcah had children for Nachar, Abraham's brother, and there were 12 then as well, one of whom there was Bisuel, the father of Rivka and Lavan. The number 12 seems to be the establishment of a nation, seems to be with the number 12, and we see it with the Jewish people, of course, and here we see it with Yishmael, back then we saw it with Milcah. And so here, Yishmael has 12 sons. And then the Torah continues to tell us, Elahem b'nei Yishmael ve'elishmael sam. These are his children, these are their names. Bechatzrahem ovetirosam, where they lived. Shnei masan nesiyim lumosam. 12 chieftains, they translated as, according to their nations. Ve'elishnei chaya Yishmael. These are the years of the life of Yishmael. Ma'as shana u'shloshim shana v'shev ha'shanim. 137 years. Vayigva vayamas vayayasef elamav. The same description of Avraham's death is used for Yishmael's death. He expired and died. Again, I'm not sure what each of those words mean. And, you know, 20 years ago I was in Atlanta for a seed program, and we went to see, what is that, that panorama?
Cyclorama.
Cyclorama, right. And the narrator, we were all up there. Remember, we were Bachram and Yeshiva, and we went to see this thing, and the lady was describing the Battle of Atlanta, and she said a phrase, and they killed them until they were dead. And all of us, all eight of us cracked up. And we were the only ones laughing. Nobody else was like laughing. We were laughing. We couldn't. They killed them until they were dead. I see. I still remember it to today. They killed them until they were dead. So I'm not sure what it, I mean, obviously the Torah means two different things here, but the translation of expired and died is a little bit funny. I'm not sure what that means. Vayishkinu mechavila ad shur. And they dwelled from Chavilah until Shur, Ashur, Pnei Mitzrayim, which is on the face of Mitzrayim. Vo'acha Ashura, as you come to Ashur, Al Pnei Chol Echav Nafal, on the face of all their brothers, over all his brothers, he dwelt. The word Nafal, Rashi calls our attention to the word Nafal, the last word in the Parsha, which could mean to dwell, it usually means to fall. And Rashi says that as long as Yishmael was still alive, his descendants were able to stand. Once he died, they fell, meaning spiritually. He held them on a certain level while he was still alive, but once he died, it fell apart. Now,
why did they use the same lashon for him as for an Abraham?
Because he did teshuva.
He died as a
tzaddik. He died as a tzaddik. That's right. I'm sorry, I meant to fill that in. Right, he died as a tzaddik, and that's why these same phrases used. Now, he lived to be 137 years old. Apparently, this is the fact that that Chazal, our sages, are bothered by. They don't understand, or they want to understand, why the Torah tells us how long he lived. It seems that they feel there's no reason to know. The Torah never tells us how old Esav was when he died. Why do we care how old Yishmael was when he died? This is a question that our sages ask. Even though there are other years that are given for people's death, but they all seem to be in order for us to add up different dates in history to work out how many years it was, for example, from Adam until Noah, or from Noah until Abraham, things of that nature. But here, the question is why his years are mentioned. And Rashi here tells us that the reason why his death is mentioned, his life, the years that he lived is mentioned, is so we can figure out an obscure fact. And here, Rashi does not go through the whole cheshbon, the whole equation, but at the end of Parshas Toldos, there is a lengthy Rashi, which is dreaded by all high school boys, that goes through the what it is that this 137 years is meant to tell us. We now are going to be those high school boys, and we are going to go through that. Because I want to show you a very, very significant factor. And we're going to do this on the board. Feel free to copy whatever you like, but you don't need to. And we're going to do this. I hope this works. We're going to do this. I don't mean to pen. I hope that my idea here works. We're going to do this with what's that?
Watch your tape.
Oh, yeah, let's take the tape. Can you hear him? We're going to do this, but they're not going to be able to see the board. We're going to show the life of Yishmael. I'll write it in English. Yishmael. The life of Yitzchak. And the life of Yaakov. Okay. Yishmael was how old when Yitzchak was born? No. 14. He was 13 when he had his bris, which was a year before Yitzchak's birth. So Yishmael was 14 when Yitzchak is born. Okay. How old is Yitzchak when Yaakov is born? We haven't done this yet. The beginning of Parshas told us. Who knows how old Yitzchak is when Yaakov is born? He was 60. The Torah says it explicitly. He was 60 years old when Yaakov is born. Okay? Which means that Yishmael at that time was 74. Okay. The next significant date is, well, I shouldn't say the next significant date, but the next one that we know of is that Yishmael dies at what age? 137. Okay? So how many years later is that? 63 years. So how old is Yitzchak when Yishmael dies? 123. And how old is Yaakov when Yishmael dies? 63. This is very important. This number, 63, is very important. Why? Because in Parashas Toldos, I realize that I'm jumping ahead with all these dates that we haven't seen yet, but I feel that this really is important to know about Yishmael, even though a lot of the dates are in Parashas Toldos, but the fact that we're going to arrive at tells us more about Yishmael than about what happens in Parashas Toldos. So Yitzchak is 123, Yishmael is 137 when he dies. And Yaakov is 63. At the end of Parashas Toldos, it tells us that after Yaakov and Esav try to get the brachos, and Yaakov gets the brachos, he gets the blessings from his father Yitzchak, and then runs away to Lavan in Haran. At that time it says that Yishmael went and married Esav's daughter. Esav went and married Yishmael's daughter. That's what it tells us. Esav had already had two wives, but he marries a third wife, Yishmael's daughter, whose name is Machalas. That's her name. You don't need to know that now. We'll get to it in Parashas Toldos. Actually, a very, very interesting fact about Machalas, which we'll get to over there. Now, and why Esav marries Yishmael's daughter, we'll talk about when we get to it in Parashas Toldos. But he does. The important fact, though, is that when he marries Yishmael's daughter, it says that he marries Yishmael's daughter, Achos Nevayos, who is the sister of Nevayos. Nevayos, if you'll recall right here, is the first son, the Bechor, of Yishmael. So it says that Esav married Machalas, the daughter of Yishmael, the sister of Nevayos. Now, that seems to be superfluous. Why tell us that she is the sister of Nevayos? Obviously, if she's the daughter of Yishmael, then she's at least the half-sister of Nevayos. Why is that important for us to know? There are several places in the Torah where it tells us that a certain woman is so-and-so's sister, and we always learn something important from there. For example, the Torah tells us that Aharon marries... Is it Aaron? Do I have it right? Aaron marries Elisheva, the daughter of Aminadav, the sister of Nachshon. Nachshon ben Aminadav was the prince, the Nasi of Shevet Yehuda, the tribe of Judah. And Aaron marries his sister. Why tell us that it's his sister? You already told us that it's Aminadav's daughter. So why tell me it's Nachshon's sister? So it is from there that the Gemara derives that if a man wants to marry a woman and he wants to know about that woman, yivdok ba'acheha, check out her brothers. If you want to know something about the woman that you're interested in marrying, check out her brothers. Because here, Aaron checked out Nachshon before he married Elisheva, as the brother reflects on the sister. It's for this reason that I once heard a father tell his sons, you better shape up so your sister will get a good shidduch. So that's over there. But the question over here is, why did the Torah call to our attention that the new wife of Esav, Machalas, was not only Yishmael's daughter, but also Nevayos' sister? And the answer that Chazal tell us, our sages say, is because the Torah is telling us that when Esav married Machalas, Yishmael died at that time. Between the engagement and the marriage, Yishmael died. And so, when he betrothed her, I guess that would be the word to use, when he began the process of trying to marry her, Yishmael was still alive, but then Yishmael died, and then he married the daughter of Yishmael, Machalas. So the one who gave her hand in marriage was her oldest brother, Nevayos. That's why it says that she was the sister of Nevayos, to point out to us that that's when Yishmael died. Why is the Torah doing that? Because the Torah wants us to know that this date, Yishmael's death at 137, Yitzchak being 123 years old, and Yaakov being 63 years old, that is when the whole episode of the Brachos takes place in Parshas Toldos. How old was Yaakov? Remember, they were twins. How old were Yaakov and Esav at the time when they were vying for that blessing from Yitzchak? And the whole business with Yaakov tricking his father with Rivka's help and all that, that took place when Yaakov was 63 years old. Doesn't say that anywhere in the Torah. We only know that because it tells us through an inference, that Yishmael died at that time as well. And Yishmael was 137 when he died, so Yaakov must have been 63. That's extremely important. Okay, now we fast forward. We know Yaakov runs away to Laban's house. He's there. He works to marry Rachel and Leah. He works how many years?
Seven.
Okay. So, first he works for 7 years. So how old is he then?
No, he didn't come to Laban. He came to Shemayim.
Okay. Hold that thought. We're going to get to that. Good. You're bringing up a good point. But let's see what we know and what we don't know. Okay? Good. The Torah doesn't tell us that point, what you just said. This is what we're gonna show. He works for Lavan for how many years?
1 year.
First for 7 years. Okay, so I'm gonna start a new count. 7 years later, he marries who?
Leah.
Oh, I should do it in English, everything else is in English. Alright. Leah and Rachel. Okay? Then he works another 7 years, because he worked after the fact to pay for marrying Rachel. So it's 14 years. Then the Torah tells us he works an additional, how many years to get the sheep of Lavan?
Six.
Additional 6 years. And Yaakov actually says it at the end of Parshas Vayetze, I worked for you for 20 years. 14 years for your two daughters, 6 years for your flock. That's explicit in the Torah. 20 years he works for Lavan. At what point in those 20 years is Yosef born? He's born at the end of the 14th year. That's when he's born. Because at that point, at the end of the 14 years, Yaakov, it says, when Yosef was born, Yaakov said to Lavan, it's time for me to work for my own keep. And that's when he started working for the sheep. So it is right here that Yosef is born. Okay? So he's born after 14 years at Laban's house. How old is Yosef when he is sold into slavery?
17.
He is 17 years old. So Yosef is 17 years old. We're going to now move here to Yosef. When Yosef is 17, he is sold. How many years is that after the 20 years we've just mentioned?
11.
So we got 7 years working for Rachel, 7 years again working for Rachel. Yosef is born at that point. 17 years later, Yosef is sold. So 7 and 17 means 31 years after beginning to work for Lavan, that is when Yosef is sold. Because these 6 are included in the 17. Okay. So we've got 31 years after Yaakov begins to work for Lavan that Yosef is finally sold. Yosef is sold into slavery and he goes down to Egypt and he's there and he's working and then he gets thrown into jail and he interprets dreams and then he gets out of jail and he comes before Paro and he becomes the viceroy of Egypt. How old is Yosef when he becomes the viceroy of Egypt? 30 years old. Again, it's explicit in the Torah that he is 30 years old when he becomes the viceroy of Egypt. 30 years old, he becomes the viceroy. I think that's how you spell it. Then that's at 30 years old. Okay. Then, immediately when he becomes viceroy, what is the most significant event in the history of Egypt that happens at that point? Really, almost the history of the world. There is, before the famine,
7 years
of plenty. Okay, 7 years of plenty. And then starts the 7 years of famine. How many years of famine passed by before Yaakov and all the brothers come down to Egypt?
Two.
Because when Yosef finally reveals himself to his brothers, Yosef says to them, it's been 2 years of famine and there's another 5 years to go. You got to come down to Egypt. So it's 2 more years of famine until everybody comes down to Egypt. Okay, I don't know if you can move this out of there. Okay, so at this point, Yaakov comes to Egypt. Let's add up the numbers. How old is Yaakov at this time? 7 years working for Rachel and Leah. 7 more years for Rachel and Leah. That's when Yosef is born. 17 years until Yosef is sold. 7 and 7 is 14. 17 is 31. Okay, Yosef is 30. This is 13 more years till Yosef becomes viceroy. That's 43 years. We're all clear so far? Did I add it wrong? 44, you're correct. I added it wrong. 7 and 7 is 14, plus the 17 is 31, and another 13 years is 44, right? 44 years old is Yosef, 44 years from the time that Yaakov began working for Yilavan is when Yosef becomes a viceroy. 44 years. Add another 7 for the years of plenty. It's 51 years. Another 2 for the years of famine is 53 years. And so, from the time that Yaakov got the blessings when he was 63 years old, until finally he comes down to Egypt, it's 53 years. 53 plus 63 is 116 years. So Yaakov should be 116 years old when he comes down to Egypt. However, when he does finally get down to Egypt, he tells Paro. Paro says, how old are you? Strange question to ask someone who walks in the door for the first time. We know that strange question Paro asks. And what does Yaakov say? I am 130 years old. And our sages say, 130 years old? No, he isn't. He's 116 years old. Why is Yaakov lying to Paro?
He's not.
Because Yaakov never lies. Yaakov is the man of emes, the man of truth. He would never lie. Why does he say he's 130? In fact, Paro thought he was much older than that. And so he says, "What? How old are you?" He says, "I'm 130 years old, but my travails have aged me prematurely." That's what essentially what he tells Paro. We'll get to that when we get to Parshas Miketz. Vayigash. So why? Where are those extra 14 years? And it is from here. Now tell us. Okay. It is from here that we know there were an extra 14 years from the time that Yaakov got the blessing before he began working for Lavan. There must have been, because there's 14 years missing in the Cheshbon. And now we're going to ask Dr. Gross to repeat the whole Cheshbon. So there's 14 years missing in the whole equation. And the 14 years don't fit anywhere in the whole structure after he begins working for Lavan, because we know all the years. We know all the years up until he gets the blessing, and we know all the years from the time he begins working for Lavan until he comes down to Egypt. And there's 14 years missing. The only place you can put these 14 years are between the time the blessing is given and the time that he gets to Lavan's house. That's the only place where the 14 years can fit. And that's where Chazal tell us, where were those 14 years? He was learning, he was studying Torah in the yeshiva. And this is a common error. Everybody says the yeshiva of Shem and Aver, but it was not. It was the yeshiva of Aver only, because Shem had passed away. Shem, when Yaakov was younger, he learned under both Shem and Aver. But at this point, when Yaakov is 63, Shem has already passed away. If you work out the years of how old Shem was, etc., he dies at some point. I just don't remember the exact age, but at some point before Yaakov is 63 years old, Shem dies. And therefore, Rashi is clear. He says it was the yeshiva of Aver that Yaakov learned in for 14 years. Why is it important that Yaakov learned in yeshiva for 14 years? We're going to talk about that more in depth when we finish Parshas Toldos and we move on to Parshas Vayetze. But the basic idea is that in order for Yaakov to be able to leave Eretz Yisrael and go as a pauper to the house of Laban, and unlike Eliezer, who goes and then comes back, unlike even Avraham, who goes down for a short time to Paro and then leaves, Yaakov goes and he has to stay at Laban's house for 20 years. And during that time, he needs to make sure that he is not influenced and that he deals with the situation properly. And therefore, he needs 14 years of uninterrupted learning to get him ready for the travails that he will face at Laban's house. And those are the 14 years that are derived over here. Now, here's the crux of the issue.
Did he also learn how to deal with Esau?
Possibly. 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 He doesn't meet Esau until he comes back from Laban's house. But here's the main point. We would not know this entire cheshbon. We wouldn't know the whole equation if it weren't for this fact. If we were not told that Yishmael was 137 years old when he died, we would not know that Yaakov was 63 when he got the blessings. If we don't know that Yaakov was 63 when he gets the blessings, the whole thing unravels. Because why? We would just say that no, we would work it backwards. We would say he wasn't 63 when he got the blessings. We would start with 130, which is a given, which is in the Torah, work our way backwards using these years that we have here, and we'd arrive at the conclusion that Yaakov must have been 77 when he got the blessings. The only way that we know he was really 63 is because we know that Yishmael died at that time. How do we know Yishmael died at that time? Because Esav marries Yishmael's daughter, Nevaios' sister. That's the only way we know. And that's why it's very important to know that Yishmael died at 137, so that we can figure out that Yaakov was 63, so that we can figure out there are 14 years missing, so that we know that he learned in the yeshiva of Aver for 14 years. That is what we learn from this one seemingly innocuous verse.
Yeah,
but
I think God wants us to think
these things. Isn't that
amazing, huh? Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Like this.
God wants us to think.
Okay. Is
this the first time
in mathematics,
where they have
gone to school?
One at a time.
Is this the first time that the yeshiva is mentioned?
No, because when Yaakov is younger, as we'll see in Parshas Toldos, it says that he dwelled in tents. And that means that he studied in the yeshiva of Shem and Aver. That was before Shem died.
I just said that Hashem wanted us to study arithmetic.
Well, at least arithmetic, yeah. But yeah. That's right. Now, what is striking to me, this equation is required knowledge for anybody who learns the Chumash, because it's in Rashi. And if you learn the Chumash, any curriculum in an in-depth Chumash class expects every student to know every Rashi. And this is a Rashi. As I said, the main Rashi is really, then the Parshas told us, Rashi alludes to it here as well. And so, as I said, this is dreaded by high school boys because they have to know it, and it's not an easy cheshbon to make. What is striking to me is that this fact that Yaakov learned for 14 years uninterrupted, this is the only place that we find this concept of uninterrupted learning. We know that it's touted today as being very important, and it is, and I can tell you from experience how important it is that a young man be given the opportunity to learn uninterrupted, that what that does for his future is unparalleled, and that you cannot give him any stronger foundation for his future than to give him a chance to study uninterrupted for a significant period of time. doesn't have to be 14 years, but for a significant period of time, Yaakov learns, as we will see later in Parshas Vayetze, to the point where he does not sleep normally during those 14 years. It says that he didn't sleep at night in the common way, on a bed at night. He catnapped for those 14 years. Because he was studying, he was learning. That's all he did. He had no cares, no worries, no other focus but learning Torah. The way that we find out about it is not because the Torah tells us explicitly. It's because the years of Yishmael are counted.
But where is some hint that he was in yeshiva or somewhere else?
That's a good question.
Because,
that's a good question.
I just learned what you said. I knew about it, but yes. I don't know where it is said.
Right. You're saying
where hint on it.
Maybe he was in Vegas.
Yes.
Right, that's
maybe.
What you're asking. Right.
Maybe.
Okay, it's a good question. That's a fair question. That's a fair question. I'm not going to answer that now, but it's a good question. Let's leave that for when we get to that discussion, when we get to Parshas Vayetze. That's a good question. But I'll get to your question in a minute. Hold on. But to me, it is striking that the way that we derive it is from counting the years of Yishmael. Hold that thought. Yes?
It may seem like a silly question, but why, if the Torah wasn't given until many years later,
good.
What are they learning?
That's a good question. We know that the Avos kept the Torah before it was given. So they knew the Torah, but they didn't have it the way we have it. They didn't have a text. So there was what to learn. There was a yeshiva of Shem. There was a yeshiva of Eber. And what did they learn? My Rosh Yeshiva, Zechon Aracha, blessed memory, Rav Yaakov Weinberg, once told us that they learned about the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, the seven Noachai laws. Imagine, that took 14 years. So imagine what 613 mitzvahs can take to study. Is Mrs. Stark, do you have a question?
Yeah, this also epitomizes 20 years of Lavan because he didn't sleep when he was 11
months. It says, Vatidachna sime enoi, I pushed off sleep from my eyes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, right.
Because it prepared him for the deceitfulness and the wickedness of it in the place and that.
Maybe it did. He was a very powerful person, as we'll see as well in Parshas Vayetze. He was very strong. The Torah could have picked any number of ways to tell us about these 14 years. Could have written it outright. So for whatever reason, the Torah didn't want to write it outright. So the Torah has to hint to it. But the Torah could have hinted to it in many different ways. But the way it chooses to hint it to us is through Yishmael. That's A. Mm-hmm. And B, through counting the life of Yishmael. The reason why that's significant to me is because what that says to me is that in some way, somehow, the life of Yishmael brought about the 14 years of Yaakov learning in the yeshiva of Eber. The Torah doesn't do this by accident. If the way that you know one fact is through another fact, then those two facts must be related in some way. And if the way the Torah tells us that Yaakov learned for 14 years, this incredible self-sacrifice, this incredible devotion to learning, is brought out by telling us how long Yishmael lived, then means Yishmael's life, which is being counted, counting means that it has significance, has to have in some way brought about the learning of Yaakov. Now, we're not going to attribute Yaakov's success to Yishmael. Obviously, Yaakov's success is far more attributable to his parents, to Yitzchak and to Rivka, than to Yishmael, his uncle. But still, we have to somehow connect the two. And so I use this again to point out that Yishmael was not all evil. There has to have been some element in Yishmael that brings about Yaakov's learning. Now you could say it in a negative way. You could say that having been exposed to the Yishmaels of the world, Yaakov understood that before he goes to the Lavans of the world, he better get himself into learning for 14 years to prepare himself. That's possible. You could say that. But then I don't think the Torah would have done it by counting his life. Counting his life means that there's something more to it. I'm not saying that that's not true, that he saw the evil and therefore understood he had to prepare himself. But I think that there's more to it. And I do believe, based on this, that there must be something about Yishmael that found expression in Yaakov. And that Yaakov saw or had the ability to learn. Somehow there is some koch, there's some strength that comes from his uncle Yishmael. There's something there that gives him that. I'm not prepared to make a suggestion exactly what it is. You may be waiting for that, but I don't feel, to me this is in itself an incredibly, this in itself is going out on a limb. This in itself is a chiddush. It's a novel idea. It's something which is hard to fathom. And so I'm not prepared to make a clear connection, but it seems to me there has to be one. Otherwise the Torah wouldn't have brought it out in this way. And I think that you've seen in the way that we have studied the Torah until this point that these sorts of connections are fundamental in how one approaches different parts of the Torah, and that there has to be a connection. So the fact that Yishmael does teshuvah at the end of his life, the fact that he puts Yitzchak before him, the fact that his life is how we know about Yaakov's learning, all creates, in my mind, a picture of Yishmael, yes, being evil, but at the same time, there's something good there that also has significance. Again, what it means for us today, I have no idea. We may find out before the coming of Mashiach, but it's something which we should bear in mind. Yeah?
I feel the connection to Abraham, the godless. You have to remember, he's still his son. Maybe he's trying to tell us that even though Yishmael was bad at some point, he did tshuva, but it goes back to that Masorah of Abraham. It shows the godless giving the Masorah to a generation.
Okay, that could be. Yeah.
Could it be that when mentions the death of Yishmael, it's of only 137 years, when mentions the death of Abraham or Sarah, it breaks it down?
It doesn't break it down here as well? 100 years, 30 years, and 7 years. Does the same thing.
Oh, in English it says
137.
And
it says it was gathered to his people, the same language,
is it that? Yeah, the Hebrew has it, Ma'as Shana, Ushloshim Shana, V'Shem
Shana.
Yeah.
It has to be our connection to Torah, and they are monotheistic.
That's true. They are, but that comes from Abraham.
Yeah, but you also must have a gut feeling about something, or you wouldn't have brought this whole thing.
That's true. I hope that by the time we get to the end of Toldos, which is where Rashi really brings out the whole thing, that we can revisit this and make it a little more clear. I think we have to see more about Yaakov. We have to know more about Yaakov before we can fully appreciate this point. But I did want to bring it out. I've never shared this with anybody. This is a thought I've had for a while, but you are the first people I've actually told it to. And, you haven't shot it down yet. So we'll hold on to it for the time being. And we'll see what happens when we get to the end of the parsha has told us.
When we talk about Muslims, are we talking about the descendants of Esau, or are we talking about the descendants of Yishmael?
No, Muslims would be, well, not all Muslims.
Right.
There are some Arabs that are descendants of Yishmael.
Okay.
Which ones are which, yeah, we don't know. It seems the Palestinians would be from Yishmael, but we don't know for sure. Bear in mind, the Egyptians, the Mitzrim, the Egyptians of old, could not be the Egyptians of today, because the Egyptians of old were black. Mitzrayim, the man Mitzrayim, Rashi says it, that was their color when they went down to Egypt. And so the today's Egyptians aren't the ones who are indigenous to Egypt. They are Arab, they're Semites, which would be either Yishmael or some offshoot of that.
But Hagar was an Egyptian princess, so she was black.
Right, okay, that's true.
So Yishmael might have been black.
Right. It may have been, or a darker color. Yeah, it could have been.
With Arabs, Arabs are genetic concept, so where could they come? Besides Ishmael. I thought that all Arabs from Ishmael.
I don't know if they all are. Certainly a certain segment of them are. Not all Muslims are, that's for sure. Muslim is a religion which has...
Yes, Muslim religion, but Arabs are genetic.
It could be they're all from Ishmael. I don't know.
So Ishmael repented to the point where all his sins were forgiven.
it seems to say all his sins are forgiven is a very strong statement. He became a tzaddik, righteous. The definition of a tzaddik is a person whose merits outweigh their demerits. That's the definition of a tzaddik.
So he didn't get any special treatment in Judaism or in the Torah.
Well, in the Torah,
anybody who repented,
then that means that he has a portion of the world to come. Somewhere he's over there somewhere. You know, we don't know. He's somewhere in a good place up there. What exactly? Where exactly it is? I don't know. And relative to the Jews, I don't know. He's not a Jew.
Where do I get that in my head that you have accountability regardless of?
No, you're right. You have accountability no matter what. But accountability could be a temporary punishment and then being given reward. If a person is a tzaddik, meaning more merits than demerits, then after they die, they may have to go through some purification process, depending on what they have, but ultimately they're going to be rewarded. Okay, that brings us to the end of Parshas Chayei Sarah. Parshas Toldos, which we will begin next week, is going to deal primarily with Yaakov and Esav, even though it is really the only parsha that deals with Yitzchak. Yitzchak's life is not dealt with in detail in the Torah. Yitzchak, most of the facts we know about Yitzchak concern Yaakov and Esav. Their birth, the blessings, are primarily what we know. There is one interlude in the middle of Parshas Toldos with Yitzchak and wells and the land of the Plishtim, which we will deal with in depth when we get there, and see what that tells us about Yitzchak. The point to remember as we're going through Parshas Toldos, that although we have to discuss Yaakov and Esav in order to understand Parshas Toldos, but really the people we're going to be focusing on are Yitzchak and Rivka. Understanding them, their relationship with each other, and their relationship with their children Yaakov and Esav. That's the focus of Parshas Toldos. And that's what we're going to start next week. It will take us several weeks to get through Parshas Toldos. I encourage you all, to the best of your ability, to not miss a class in Parshas Toldos, and if you do, to make it up. Because here especially, we're going to be building one on the other. To really understand what happened, especially with the blessings, one has to understand it from beginning to end, and it's not a one-hour discussion. It's going to take us several classes. So I encourage you. I spoke to Mr. Killian about getting the classes online. He apologized that we weren't getting online right away, but he's going to try to get them online right away at askaudio.org. And if you do miss a class, try your best to make up the material. That way you won't get a bad mark on the test.